everybody, and welcome to the REScreening.com podcast. I'm your host, REScreening.com's own Mark Eastman. And with me, as always, is co-host extraordinaire Shane Leonard.
Hello.
And man, the headphones are weird.
They're a little weird. I don't know what it is, but...
I don't know what that is either, but theoretically, the sound is coming through for everyone else pretty well. But
right.
I don't know. Maybe we're in different acoustics.
Yeah.
That's affecting our headphones.
We're in a different part of the studio.
That could be it. Anyway, this week, as we get really close to awards and all sorts of awards, but mostly the Critics' Choice Awards is on the 11th, which will obviously lead us into the Golden Globes. And now there's like this nice month cushion in between everything.
Right.
So right around a month. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But this week we're going to cover Hacksaw Ridge, because that came out wide this week.
Yep.
And Nocturnal Animals, which comes out next week
wide.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I think it might be in LA right now.
Right.
But I could be wrong about that. Anyway, but that's a big one next week. And we may cover something else.
Sure.
As we said last week, we may have to start throwing them out a lot at a time. But we got to try and stick a little bit with what's coming out
with
theaters. And then it's going to be a giant push as soon as it gets the 23rd. Next week, my guess is that next week I do like four or five.
Right.
And the week after that, the same thing, maybe even more. Because the week after that, it'll be so huge. But there's too much to cover. But before we jump into either of those, we're going to go through the nominations came out for the Critics' Choice Awards. So we're going to like run through those real quick.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we're going to say what necessarily has to win or anything like that, because then we'd be giving away our lists, right?
You love that. Have you started your list?
Nobody wants to give away their list. You know, I have a few. So if we're just doing 10, which the list is always insane for us anyway. Sometimes it's like, but really it's the top 15 or who knows what and craziness ensues. But I know I have like four movies that I know for absolute sure are in my top 10.
So that you know they're definitely on the list. You don't know what order, but you know they're in.
Right. Yeah. Not necessarily. And then I have a lot of movies that I have to work out exactly where they go.
Yep.
Like I have all the movies that are in my top 20.
Yeah.
But then figuring out which ones get through to the top 10, I just don't know. There's a lot of movies. This year, as I said, I put on the site kind of the rundown of the nominations as well. And as I said there, it's a really easy year to predict.
Yeah,
it's a freakishly easy year to predict the nominations.
Right.
I don't know that it's necessarily going to be predicting the win.
Right.
And especially because we do have this this window now for the Critics' Choice, where now there's a basically 2-month span before you got the Oscars. That's enough time for there to be like the backlash against things.
Against
like some
them.
Stuff.
Yeah, wait for it.
Some stuff just happens like that, right?
Yep.
And like right now, we've got La La Land and Manchester by the Sea, and to a certain extent, Fences, kind of the ones that everyone's really talking about, right?
Right.
But you've got time for, by the time we get to the Oscars, whatever wins on the 11th, you know, you just don't know.
Right.
It could shift in that amount of time. And and it happens every year.
I was going to say, we've seen it.
It happens all the time. And it usually happens where about mid-November, getting to the end of November, there's usually something that everyone thinks is a really strong contender that by the time you get there, it like doesn't even get nominated or whatever. I mean, it's like not even anywhere in the running anymore.
Yeah.
And now there's enough time for that to basically like happen after something actually wins.
Right.
And then still somewhere get thrown under the bus. But this year, as far as what's nominated, you just knew.
Right.
I mean, there's not, and not only that, but for almost every category.
Were you surprised with anything?
I was not surprised very much looking at all of the awards, right? I was not surprised very much. And this year, I've been in the Broadcast Film Critics Association for, I think, like 6 years now. And this year is my nominations actually got nominated with a greater percentage than I think any other year.
Right.
I think there were like two things in two categories.
Yeah.
That maybe three or something that I voted for them to be nominated and they didn't end up getting nominated. And that's, right. And that's way unusual. It's right. Usually like really like 10 or 15 things. So,
right.
Especially the way nominating goes, you know, there's like, if there's in every category except Best Picture, you only nominate three things
right.
And five things end up getting nominated.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's what you put in first, second, third, and then the algorithms go crazy. And then it's, you know, the computer has to process it for like a day and a half
right.
Or whatever.
Right.
So it's a complicated thing. But as far as if you look at, right, the Best Picture nominations, you've got Arrival, Fences, Hacksaw Ridge, Hell or High Water, La La Land, Lion, Loving, Manchester by the Sea, Moonlight, and Sully. And I don't think that there's really anything that you're really surprised
right.
About not being there. Me personally, I might have had a spot there for Nocturnal Animals, actually, because I thought that was really good.
That's some
and
foreshadowing.
We won't, yeah, we won't give away the whole thing.
Yeah, I love it.
And I'll tell you, I'll give away another hint, right?
Yeah.
If I had to make room for it, I wouldn't mind getting rid of Hacksaw Ridge.
Right.
That'd be okay
you
with me.
Tying
right.
Everything into this week.
Right. But that's
yeah.
You know, that's the best.
That's the way it is.
10
I
best
mean,
movies of the
right,
year, right?
Right.
But then even it's kind of weird because even it's always about snubs, right? Every award
right.
Season is all about snubs. And this year, I don't know. I'm not sure what people are going to have massive complaints about
right.
in most any category, right?
Right.
There are going to be a couple where I would say probably director, maybe screenplay,
yeah.
Maybe some like supporting actor or something like that. Some people think, maybe this or that. In large, this is a year that did not have a lot of
right.
People who were in serious contention for
yeah.
Getting – anyway. So best actor, you've got Casey Affleck – in Manchester by the Sea, Joel Edgerton, Loving, Andrew Garfield, Hacksaw Ridge, Ryan Gosling, La La Land, Tom Hanks, Sully, Denzel Washington, Fences. So it's all the movies that were nominated for
nice.
Best Picture
yeah.
And all of their actors pretty much. And in that one, man, I don't know. I would have liked to seen Gyllenhaal maybe get nominated there.
Sure.
And once again, I didn't really think Andrew Garfield was necessarily that awesome, but
man.
But you know this is yeah. A year, it's an interesting year too. Not only is it easy to predict, but it's easy to predict for a lot of reasons, right? You know, Tom Hanks made a movie,
right.
Denzel Washington made a movie.
Right.
There's a whole lot of your nominations covered right there.
Right.
There's a big budget war movie.
Right.
That's been nominated
that's
for stuff.
That's
just how that works, right?
Right.
And you've got even Manchester by the Sea, even though it's like a different category, but it's like this exact kind of like sad drama that is fairly likely to get nominated as long as anyone ever paid attention to it.
Well, there's every
you
year
know I mean?
That art house slash this covers a couple. It's the art house film that's highly regarded, but it's also the every year there's a character with a debilitating or defeating disability or mental illness,
right,
you know,
right.
Like a huge depression, or they have a mental impairment, and this kind of covers a few things,
right. And there's a lot of you know the PC world of nominating, right, when certain things happen,
right.
Which so you go on to best actress, right, and you've got Amy Adams in Arrival, Annette Bening in 20th Century Woman, Isabelle Huppert in Elle, which I thought was awesome to see that actually get nominated because it was very deservedly so. But it's, you know, one of those things that Easily might not have gotten nominated. Right. Ruth Negga in Loving, Natalie Portman in Jackie, and Emma Stone in La La Land, which close to the, if not the movies that actually got nominated, but the ones that were really close or whatever. So you could have gone either way. Like a lot of people might complain about Jackie not getting nominated, 20th Century Women not getting nominated. You knew 20th Century Women was going to get nominated for something, and at least a few things, right? Because it has to. It's got that built in.
Yeah.
I don't know that Annette Bening is necessarily
deserving.
But she's Annette Bening, and you know, she made a movie and she's going to get nominated. And
it's interesting to keep seeing the one thing that keeps arising, you know, across the categories is La La Land. Every single time there's a,
it got the most nominations and it's everyone's
still talking about it and
loving it. Yeah. Best supporting actor. I'm not even going to try to say Mahershala.
Sure.
Okay, I did. I lied. I tried to say
it.
Mahershala Ali in Moonlight, Jeff Bridges in Hell or High Water, Ben Foster in Hell or High Water, Lucas Hedges in Manchester by the Sea, Dev Patel in Lion, and Michael Shannon in Nocturnal Animals. Michael Shannon is actually really good. I think it's interesting that you get two Hell or High Waters. So that's a space where someone might complain about somebody else not getting in when one movie gets two. So that's obviously opening the door there for people to yell at you. My feeling right now is that the voting is either going to go strongly for Moonlight in general. Not that maybe we're necessarily really voting for the best supporting actor, but we want to vote for Moonlight as much as possible because that's how that works too, right?
Well, also if people feel it doesn't have a shot at winning,
they're gonna
let it clean up the minor stuff, which is not to say it's a minor category.
I think though in reality, I don't know if I was like really trying to be objective about this, I think I have to give it to Lucas Hedges.
Yeah.
In Manchester by the Sea. I thought he was just really impressive. And as a supporting actor nomination. But I could see people wanting to vote for Hell or High Water too. But then now, what if people want to vote for Hell or High Water and you're going to split the vote. and not everyone's going to
vote for the same one. Manchester by the Sea eventually, but
that'll be next week. I'm sure.
Astoundingly good. He's got to get something somewhere, whether it be one of the big ones.
Well, and here's the cool thing is that the Critics' Choice have the Best Young Actor category, which is our own thing.
And so
he's got to win that. If you're trying to be real,
legitimize the category.
But listen, there are actually other interesting people in that category that got nominated. But anyway, Best Supporting Actress, Viola Davis in Fences, Greta Gerwig in 20th Century Women, Naomi Harris in Moonlight, Nicole Kidman in Lion, Janelle Monáe in Hidden Figures, and Michelle Williams in Manchester by the Sea. And one of the most interesting things about all of the nominating process for me this year, and the actual nominations that came out, is that this is usually a category where you're just desperate to have anything to nominate at all. And at least, you know, even though the industry is, you know, horrible to women and all that, but at least this year, you've got a lot of contenders where you're like, any one of them could win. They are all really strong. They're all really good performances. They're all, you know, really well written and good actresses in them and all that.
Yeah.
And because this year, I swear, when I had to nominate for this, I was like, I actually have things to choose from that I really, you know, feel strongly about. Usually this one is rough. There's usually like the three where you're like, those are the obvious ones. And after that, you're like, man, I just can't find great things that I want to nominate. And not because of the actors, but they just can't get solid roles that way. Hey, best actress. So obviously Lucas Hedges,
right.
You've also got Alex Hibbert in Moonlight, Louis McDougall in A Monster Calls, Medina Nawonga in Queen of Katwe, Sunny Pawar in Lion, and Haley Steinfeld and The Edge of 17. And those are all really good.
Did you see The Queen of Cotway?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't.
Yeah,
seen that.
And
I heard that was really good.
All of those are really good. Anyway, acting ensemble, 20th Century Women, Fences, Hell or High Water, Hidden Figures, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight.
Right.
And the thing that I find interesting there is that it's almost a waste this year. It's like a waste of a category. And usually it's a very interesting category because you can get something where you're like, is this the best movie? I don't know.
Right.
But
I'll be damned if this isn't the best.
But it's a awesome group of people.
Yeah.
This time you both have too many. It's almost like everybody suddenly was just vying for this award.
Yeah.
Everybody, no one cared about making a great movie.
Yeah.
But you've got almost all the same movies as you've got for Best Picture, like, you know, minus La La Land is like serious contenders.
Right.
But then you have to think, you know, what happens if one of these movies wins Picture and then doesn't win this?
Right.
What?
Right.
I mean, then it's weird. Best Director, it's still all the same movies. It's just, I'm not even going to read all the names because it'll take forever. But it's still, it's La La Land, Hacksaw Ridge, Moonlight, Manchester by the Sea, Hell or High Water, Arrival, and Fences.
Yeah.
So it's all the same movies. Minus Martin Scorsese's movie, which is interesting, but in all fairness to people voting for director, and you never know how this will go with like the Academy, because maybe Academy voters will vote differently.
Right.
But that movie's weird.
Is it?
And it's hard to get nominated as best director if your movie is really weird.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, there's another one there that I could get rid of.
Yeah,
and let Martin Scorsese in pretty easily.
That's super foreshadowing.
And then,
wow.
I won't go through all of them, but
that's a good sample. And
those are like
the
big
top
ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are, I will say, though, we won't go through them all, but there are really tough races this year in both screenplay categories, I think. Because it's still more or less all the same movies, but there are other ones thrown in there.
Yeah.
Specifically for screenplay, but that's going to be a tough thing to vote for. And then what it comes down to is, are there going to be enough people, especially, I like to think this doesn't work the same in the Critics' Choice because I'm in it and I like to think that it's better.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Oscar time, the Academy really has a habit of whatever wins Best Picture, we want to vote for that for everything.
Right.
If it's the Best Picture, and I just voted for it as Best Picture, then how could it not be the Best Director and the Best Screenplay and on, right? And not have the Best Actor. And So I'm really hoping that doesn't happen, though.
Yeah.
I mean, in either, because I don't know
Oscars, yeah.
Right. I don't know that it's necessarily warranted this year, right?
You don't. You're one kind of people that, because I know people who actually think that if something wins Best Picture, then it should by proxy automatically have the director. It doesn't mean the best actor, because sometimes you get an actor in something.
In one thing that he's just awesome, but the movie's
not
great.
The kind of person that not in your actual critic role, but as like just a guy who loves movies. Like, you don't believe that if you get Best Picture, then that's locked up. It should be director, actor. Like, you don't think that has to follow suit, or do you?
No, because I actually know what directors do, and what it means.
You've seen behind the curtain too many times to know.
I know what it means to have a movie that's directed well, right? Because I think you could have like the best picture. Like, I could vote for something and it's the best picture and go, well, but it was directed okay.
Right.
It was directed good enough that it's, you know, worthy of being the best picture out of it. It was the movie I liked the most, and in general, it was the best. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best directed. There could be some other movie that's awesomely directed, and I could go, I don't even love the movie, right? But it's still it's directed well, right? Or even with screenplay, because there are a lot of movies I think that never even are in the running to get nominated for Best Picture that have awesome screenplays.
Yeah,
And, you know, actually a good one this year, and now that I try to think of it, I'm not even sure if it got nominated, I better look at the screenplays real quick. So I'll just say the screenplays, actually. Okay. Original screenplay, La La Land, Moonlight. There it is, The Lobster. That was the one I was going to mention. Yeah. I couldn't remember for absolutely sure.
Yeah.
Manchester by the Sea, Loving, Hell or High Water, and the adapted screenplays are Lion, Nocturnal Animals, Rival, Sully, Hidden Figures, and Fences. And that was the movie that I was going to mention, The Lobster, because is that really something that I think should get nominated for Best Picture? I don't think so. I love the movie. It was awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's really deserving of being nominated for Best Picture, but it was absolutely one of the best screenplays.
That's cool.
Right?
That's
so,
and I know
so there you go.
That can be hard for people. They're like, well, that should be it. You're like,
right.
You could have a great story, but if a person doesn't put it in front of you in the best way, it's just not winning.
Right.
You know, so.
All right. Anyway, so we've wasted enough time on that, but it is going to be an interesting year. I am actually really interested to see what the early Critics' Choice does, right? Because so far, historically, it's been the best predictor of the Oscars.
Yeah.
But now, is anything going to change about that now that the Critics' Choice giving something a win opens the door for being backlash against it, right? Especially if something like La La Land or Manchester by the Sea wins Best Picture and have had kind of all this momentum going into it.
Yeah.
Does actually, you know, slapping the gold star on it this early make room for, you know, 2 months of people kind of flipping the script on it, and by the time it gets to the Oscars, it won't win.
And you see that, you know, kind of push back on it. Yeah, that's happened.
Right. That will be cool. Interesting. So as we said, this week we're going to do at least Hacksaw Ridge and Nocturnal Animals, and we'll see how far we get on those.
Yeah.
And then maybe we'll slip something else in.
Yeah.
But then starting after this week, it's probably going to be just crazy rapid fire reviews. So Hacksaw Ridge. Mel Gibson movie, Andrew Garfield stars in it, and it's all, if you've watched the trailer or heard anything about it, you know that it's based on the true story of the medic in World War II who does not want to call himself a conscientious objector because he wants to be in the service. He volunteered, he signed up himself.
Yep.
And he wants to serve and he wants to be a medic, but he's not going to shoot anyone. He doesn't want to carry a gun. He's very religious. He's seriously anti-gun and he doesn't want to kill anyone, no matter what. And so he, and in the end, I think even if you just watch the trailer, it tells you right in the trailer that he ends up getting like the Congressional Medal of Honor and the first person who was a conscientious objector, although because he always was so look out for that.
Yeah.
He always was technically a conscientious objector. That's,
right.
You know, they check that box or whatever, and there you are.
Yeah.
So he's the first conscientious objector to win the Medal of Honor, even though that almost makes no sense because the term is for people who don't serve at all,
who don't
show up.
They refuse,
So anyway, that's the movie. He goes in, and then the movie kicks off, and you see like some of his childhood and kind of growing up a little, and you see his parents and his brother and the whole thing, and then we get to more of the actual thing that kind of got him the main notoriety, the one battle thing. So that's the movie. I had a little bit of a difficult time with this one. Because on the one hand,
I just changed your grade that I think you're going to give it. I think you're going to go soft on it, but I'm going to see. Well,
You don't know what to give it. I actually really didn't like this movie.
Yeah.
It was, just out of the gates, I just have to admit that I don't really like war movies as a genre in general. There are lots of war movies that I like,
but
in general, this is not my thing, right? I actually think, you know, so that everyone can just judge my judgment, right? I think Saving Private Ryan is really overrated.
See, that's the starting spot for you.
I don't think it's bad. Right. I think it's way better than this.
Right, right.
But I still think it's overrated. I still think that it's, you know, there's something about a war movie. Like, people kind of want to run with a war movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, I give this a 6. It was...
Better than I had, yeah.
It was okay, right? There were parts of this movie that I really hated. And I have to tell you, just going into the movie, I think there should be a disclaimer on this movie that the movie is like a bit over 2 hours. I think it's like 2:10 or... Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean,
and the movie is an hour of setup. And an hour of watching one battle happen for an hour.
Yeah.
And I feel like they should tell you that before you sit down.
Right.
And then there's like 20 minutes, you know, really like 15 or something like with the credits or whatever. There's like 12 or 15 minutes of kind of wrapping stuff up.
Yeah.
But it is like, I really started, I got really pulled out of the movie.
Yeah.
Just going, how long are we watching this? Like, it is just the one thing. You're just watching one thing happen for an hour.
Yeah.
And there's no movie that's going to do that. That's going to work for me, no matter what, right. no matter what we're watching.
No matter whether it's your favorite or not.
There's no mafia movie where they're just battling it out in an alley for an hour.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to be interested in watching that anyway. But so that's my, I gave it a 6. It's, I kind of had to struggle with giving it that high rating, really.
Yeah.
It's not good. it may be this guy's true story, but there are still some things that you should change about it. Right.
Yes.
But even above and beyond that, there's got to be more story to it. And and for me personally, Mel Gibson doesn't win any awards for this movie as far as being a director of this. But I still think if this whole battle that we watch, I feel like that could have easily been 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And we could just have more of some actual story happen.
That's a long battle. It really is.
It's mind blowing. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's my rating. You gave it like 10 and a half, right?
we're instituting the new 11 plus category.
Right.
I gave it 6.5. And most of that,
I thought you were going a whole other way.
No, most of that for me is, it's tricky. A lot of what happened to negate any favoritism I had for what I enjoyed with the film comes solely on Gibson's directing. I shudder to want to believe that it's always going to be this way with him now, but maybe he's become so insulated. Well, okay, I can guess all these things. It just seems so heavy-handed in all the religious overtones that it forces on you in a story that is already based upon the preposition of his religious sort of interference into war. You know, he wants to go, and like what you were saying earlier, his whole selling point is, you know, I'm not going to pick up a gun, and they throw that numerously at you in the trailer, but it's not sold much in the trailer, but it is in the film, where he realizes that in order to do his duty as a citizen, and this is at a patriotic time, you know, in the country where you can't, he's afraid of sitting at home and having everybody look at him like, why aren't you serving? Everybody is.
Right.
So he's going to go to be a doctor. He wants to save lives.
And it's not just that, although it is that, but also he really feels it himself. Right. He really feels like, I should not be just sitting here being safe.
And I actually like very much, on the whole, the performances that I got in the film. I didn't have much of a problem with the performances per se, but the story, the devotion to certain events that didn't necessarily make the story seem so interesting to me, but apparently were very interesting to Gibson. It's his story. You know, and again, there's a lot of heavy-handed, As much heavy-handedness in this as there was in that Will Smith Scientology film for me.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
When I started seeing it, I'm like, come on, how many Christ poses are you going to put these guys in? Or how many, you know, baptismal poses? And then there are all these weird things that it was so hard to watch much of the end, partially because, you know, this doesn't, to anyone who's seen the trailer, this doesn't ruin a thing. There's this great wall they have to climb. And Desmond Doss, who's Garfield's character, he has to ascend this while everyone disbelieves in him, and they distrust him, and they don't like him, and they're afraid that he's going to get them killed because he's the conscientious objector. He doesn't even carry a gun. So he must climb this great ascension, and atop this great ascension, he provides basically what is nothing short of a miracle. And he descends back down to all those who disbelieved, and now they are changed.
Right, right.
How goddamn heavy-handed can you be enforcing this down my throat when, in fact, like what you were saying, that whole battle, though tricky for me, because what you started to say, and I was going to interrupt, but I'm glad I didn't because I hate interrupting you anyway, but, you know, and I feel like it's because I've seen them.
Right.
I've seen so many World War II movies and Vietnam films. And again, I never served in any war. So that's an easy checkmate to put on me and be like, what do you really know? But as far as films go, they all do basically the same thing. And this film doesn't do anything different except take as an overall feeling. Like, this guy has an interesting story to tell, but I don't know that it's a 2-hour and 19-minute story. I feel like at times, you know, it's kind of like
I feel like it might be actually. Well, it's like, except that they don't want to say it. They just want to shoot an hour of the thing.
That might be true too. It feels like they're taking, you know, a 50-minute story and they're stretching it into 4 hours.
Right.
There are these moments where it works very well, and when it's working very well, it's a finely tuned machine with the performances, the directing, the pacing. Everything is really going forward for me, and then it either gets in its own way, or it just stumbles with this weird affect. You know, and part of the problem for me also is, yet again, we said this, I think we said it last week as well, the trailer gives away everything.
Pretty much.
If the trailer rather only suggested that he might still have a heroic act in him, but instead, you know, just kind of basically explain the whole thing in the trailer. Like, when it's happening, I don't care about watching what's happening because I know it. The war scene is viscerally amazing. It is so violently, I mean, I guess truthful. I know a lot of people said Saving Private Ryan was basically like, that's how it was, you know?
Right.
And I feel like in this, where you see bullets and bodies and blood and things just everywhere, and it feels very chaotic and very traumatic, I believe that is how war looks. But then all of a sudden, you know, he's running, standing up.
But then it only goes on for so long before you're like, who cares?
Who cares? Right, because there's not enough there to carry it aside from both the weird visceralness that it feels like. Gibson wants to almost, I feel like this movie also is one of these that people only see 6 times a year. Like, when they go out and they see this is huge. And it is so impactful, and the violence is so hard to watch, but yet he's basically daring you to watch it for the heroism in it. And to me, I do exactly what you just did. I roll my eyes.
Right.
I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. There's a lot in this movie that I think, first of all, it's trying to do things and it has no understanding of how to do them. And I give that all to Mel Gibson, right?
Yeah.
Like you were saying about putting people in the, you know, cross poses and whatever stuff like that. This is a movie that is, it's like it's by a person who's heard of symbolism,
right,
but doesn't understand what it means and thinks that what it means is that you use your symbol
and then
put a big sign under it
that
tells you what it means.
Right.
And then it's also like this, the whole scene, and I like a lot of the stuff that happens early on.
Yeah.
Except that I think even the stuff that I like, I feel like they rush through it because they just can't wait to get to the big battle, right? So there is stuff that I like going on, especially when he kind of has to figure out, you know, like his romance with the girl that he's, you know, trying to woo and everything. Meanwhile, he's got like his dad who's, you know, an overly typical jerk dad guy.
Right.
But a lot of that stuff still, it was interesting, and it was, you know, kind of getting me invested in the movie. And, you know, especially because I have no love for pacifists either. So that's not helping the movie. Right. But it was pretty good. But then the rest of the movie, it's almost like you just don't understand making movies at all if you've got an hour of this battle, because then it's like, you know, the point of movies to some extent, or making a movie and telling a story, is, you know, you look at a scene of a guy putting on his coat in his house, right? And then the next thing you see instantly, he's like in his car.
Right.
And then you watch him in his car for like 10 seconds. And then the next thing you see is like, he's pulling into the airport. And then the next thing you see is he's sitting on a plane for a second.
Right.
You don't watch him for 8 hours fly to London. Right. And just sit there watching the whole thing happen and never leave the guy and follow it all along.
Yeah.
And it's like the last hour of this movie is just, you don't understand movies. Right. I mean, okay, he pulls them all out. I get it. And then mixed into it is a bunch of stuff that there are several scenes where the Japanese are kind of mulling around, not finding him.
Right.
And a lot of the stuff that happens in there, seriously, it's like, maybe that really happened.
Right.
Don't put it in the movie.
Right.
I don't care if that really happened, change it.
Yeah.
And then it goes, you know, he's batting the grenades out of the air and the whole thing. Maybe that dude really did that. And then, you know, you're awesome and give him another medal for doing that, because that is badass.
Right.
But don't put it in the movie because it's
now
just ridiculous, right? It's crazy. So
there was this, there's this thing that is, it's like this mantra that the character says, and it's in the trailer too, where he says, you know, please, Lord, help me get one more. You know, and again, when he's doing this,
and then he says it at the end, at the end, the real guy, like really says it.
In the film, when he's doing this, and he's in that scene, in, you know, the last battle, the only battle of the film, and he's pulling these soldiers out, and the film makes a point to really reinforce how good of a guy this guy was, because he pulls some Japanese guys out, and I'm like, all right. Oh, okay. I'm okay with that. But every single time his hands are bloody because he's lowering people down this huge 350, 400 foot ridge. And he just realizes he's got the strength to go back and get one more. Please, Lord, help me get one more. And I'm thinking to myself, really, this sermon is driving me nuts. I'm genuinely watching. And this part of the film only takes up, it felt longer, but I bet it only takes up 5 or 6 minutes of the film when he's really saying this over and over again and doing it. And I kid you not, I'm like, there goes a star. There goes a star. Because I don't need you to pander to me about how Christians, you know, and this isn't a slight against any religion, but like when they're in these movie roles and they have to be magnanimous beyond measure, you know, they're like, let me just save one more. And the metaphor there is so obvious. You're disenfranchising my interest in what you're doing. For me, it's weird. There's three parts of the film. There's the first third, which is him before he enlists. There's the middle third, which is him enlisted but not in war. And then the last third, which is ridiculous.
Which is the last half.
It's the last half of the movie. Right. For me, though it is very cliche, the middle part of the film is the most interesting to me.
Yeah.
Even though, and I love Vince Vaughn, but he is – and he doesn't do a bad job in the film, except when he shows up on the battlefield and looks like a guy. I mean, and this is no offense to someone like Peter Dinklage. If he was the drill instructor and then all of a sudden he's in battle, I'd be like, that guy didn't belong there either.
Right.
He just looks so terribly out of place, yet can bark the Full Metal Jacket insults that you need.
Right.
Be that guy in the mess hall or in the barracks. But the moment you put a hard hat on him and have bullets flying by him, I don't believe that either.
Right.
You know, and the first third is kind of Hallmark, very syrupy, you know, very, very kind of like condescending in how we build him up. Even
I'm going to take another star off if you don't stop talking pretty soon.
All right. it's strange to find the most enjoyable part of the film, the most cliched part. Yet I also felt that that's where Garfield really figured out who Desmond Doss was. And it was interesting because it wasn't always put upon him to be the religious metaphor or anchor, you kind of got to know his platoon as well, and they were full of interesting characters.
Right.
The film has a bunch of recognizable names in it.
Right.
You know?
And it, we're both just completely bagging on
I
this movie.
I actually want to take another star away right now.
Even though it's we gave it 6 and 6.5, and we've done nothing but rip on it. And I think for me, the only way it got 6, for a while I was really at like a pretty hard 4 on this movie.
Yeah.
And for me, even though I don't actually think Garfield necessarily deserves.
He's okay.
Best actor. No. He's actually pretty good.
He's okay in this.
But I don't think this is a year where he deserves best actor nom.
No.
There's way too much else out there where people are really
right.
doing serious things, and I don't know that he's doing anything that's that impressive. He's
right.
still pretty good in the movie. But for me, it gets most of the first hour,
yeah.
even though a lot of it is a little bit goofy,
right?
But I still kind of liked it.
I did too.
And I liked, I think really what I liked, oddly enough, if you don't count his dad, in the first hour of the movie, I pretty much liked everyone else in the first
yeah.
half of it. And I think there were some things where you had like Vince Vaughn was, going a little too hard on it
right.
for him. Like if you want to have him in it and play this role, like every drill sergeant in the army is not the exact same guy.
They think they are.
Maybe they are all very similar in a lot of ways. They're all close. They're all doing the same basic job, but they're not the exact same guy. Like he doesn't have to try and do an impression of like Louis Gossett Jr.
Right, or Harvey Emery. I mean, he's really
or fun. Who like whoever is going
yeah.
to be like a guy. He can just be someone who's doing that same job and
right.
he's a little bit of a different guy.
He
goes a little too hard
yeah.
on it, right? And you know, part of the problem with him doing it is that I could really see one of those guys just popping him.
Sure.
Sure. Like he's just not the guy who can pull that version off
right.
in
right.
in reality. I
yeah,
don't know.
I agree.
It did at least that's how it seemed.
I didn't mind Hugo Weaving as the dad, even though he's a bit of a character.
I didn't mind
but
him.
I liked him.
I didn't mind
his
him.
Well,
I didn't like the character.
I liked his dad a million times when he comes in with the letter.
Yeah, yeah.
I love
yeah,
that,
that was
he,
great.
When he just breaks all the protocol and the justice who's sitting there is just kind of like really like let's see what you got to do.
Yeah, and then
that whole scene I love. And his
dad is like, really, is that what you're going to say?
Right.
You
yeah,
really going to say
really
I can't give
that.
This to you?
Right.
Which, so I like that scene.
Those are the moments
in
the movie
I like that in. Scene, and at the same time, I hate that scene, right?
Wow.
Because I like that
yeah.
scene because the scene plays out really cool, and it's a fun
yeah.
scene, and I like him in it, and I like what everyone does in the scene. I hate it because that's not how that works.
I know. don't bring your realism into this. Like,
that's not,
you know,
it's not like he would. It's not like other than that scene, he would have just gone down. We'd
right.
never heard of him.
Right.
He'd still be rotten in a
right.
cell somewhere. That's not a
yeah.
thing. But
right.
anyway,
but I
still like the scene.
Anyway,
that's one of those parts where it's like, see, that's clearly not what really happened.
Right.
And we changed it.
Right.
Okay. So now
yeah.
there's some other things.
Right. We're gonna Hollywood that.
Yeah. Whatever.
This is a film that I think a lot of people are going to see because it's the seasonal December war. You're going to feel the feels, and it's got a great uplifting message. And you know, you see 6 to 7 films a year. This is one you're going to check out.
Right. And you know, I will say this though. Yeah.
yeah.
I don't think it deserves.
I don't think it deserves a nomination for the best picture.
No.
Or you know, Andrew Garfield is good, but he's not outstanding. And I don't think Mel Gibson did anything extraordinary.
No, I got my 20 movies
yeah.
that are some 10 of them yeah. are the top 10
right.
and whatever. And this is not even amongst those at all. So
this isn't going to make your worst film though, is it?
No.
Because it's not, I mean,
no,
we,
because
we
I gave
hard,
it a 6.
Right,
I mean, I still think it's actually pretty good.
Yeah. You can take a spiteful stand and put it on there,
but I will say this before we move on to the next movie,
yeah.
which we're going to have to give a quick run through.
Right.
But I do have to say this for all of the preaching and garbage and stuff that keeps happening. And it happens too often. And
yeah.
you just keep saying it. I mean, you know, just be a religious dude, right? You don't have to be,
right.
every religious person in a movie does not have to be the most religious person
ever
in the world, right? But for all that it does that, and I think it's awful, right? At the end, I actually like that scene where they're waiting for him.
I love that scene. That scene is awesome. When they're waiting, you know, they got like a 7 o'clock time on the mountain. It's like 7:12 and they're like, what are you doing? They're like, we're waiting for Private Doss.
Right.
And the guy on the line is like, you're waiting for who?
Right.
And it doesn't work in the trailer at all. But in the movie, that was actually, I mean, chilling is not really the adjective I want to say, but that was effective.
Yeah.
I actually was like,
that was good.
He's not only earned all those respectful, you know, all the respect from all those guys, but I believe in that situation.
And then I'll tell you what I hate too is I really like that. I like the way that's done. Tell you another thing that I hate about Mel Gibson is because he's got this really good scene that works, and then he runs right up the hill and ruins it.
Right.
Because like the very first thing that happens is awful.
I
agree.
Can I just ask something before we jump to Nocturnal Animals?
Sure. All
right. So the Japanese have
occupied time.
They have. I know. I'll make it very quick. The Japanese have occupied this space. They got the high ground, and they're going to win through attrition. They just got to get up the hill, secure a place, and run forward. Why haven't the Japanese just walked over and cut the ropes off this thing?
Yeah, I don't know.
If that could be explained to me, I would believe. I'd give it another star and a half. Doesn't make any sense at all.
They were right there.
Because in the end,
no
when
idea.
They're lowering everybody down, they're at the top shooting down at people, and they receive returning fire. They could have walked over at any point, just been like, this is how you guys are coming up.
Right.
We're going to fix it.
Well, see ya. Yeah, it doesn't – you can't start trying to make sense all of right. it because earlier on, the Japanese are firing artillery at them. And there's absolutely no reason that they couldn't just fire artillery at the edge of the thing.
Just take care of that.
And just take out the whole beach below, right? I mean,
this is why we're not five-star generals. Anyway, people are going to see it, but I'm not, even with a six and a half, I'm not pushing real hard for this because I think there's a ton of other films out there that are way
better. Oh, yeah. Especially this month, you have choices like nobody's business, right? And they're all really good. Okay. Now, we have to really, really quickly talk about Nocturnal Animals.
I think maybe that will help it, too, because I think it's so weird. Maybe the brevity will maybe make it make more sense. I don't know. If I think we start talking about it too long, I think we'll lose ourselves in it.
Maybe. We'll get lost in the spiral. Okay, it's Jake Gyllenhaal and Amy Adams and Michael Shannon in a supporting role. And this is the movie that I won't even like try to explain it at the beginning because the trailer won't, except that I am going to give stuff away that the trailer doesn't. So all you're warned there just on the basic idea, right?
Right.
Because the trailer will not tell you, and there have been further trailers and TV spots and everything, and not one of them tells you that it's not just one story.
Right.
Right.
This is a nested story.
It's a story within a story, and most of the crazy stuff you see happen in the trailer is stuff that happens in a book that Jake Gyllenhaal's character wrote.
Right.
And it's not stuff, and you see Jake Gyllenhaal doing it.
Right. So you believe it.
And then it jumps to Amy Adams like looking shocked.
Right.
And you're like, what?
Right.
Like they're
like
those are two
they
were not in the same room.
Right.
It's like two whole other things happening. So the story the story is Amy Adams is married.
Right.
And was previously married, a decade ago to Jake Gyllenhaal. And they got married, got divorced, got married too young, all this stuff. And now she's married to some other guy who's really rich and
Army Hammer,
yada, yada. Right. I mean, it's all this stuff. But what happens is now all of a sudden she gets a package and it's a book that he wrote and dedicated to her.
Right.
And then she's now not extremely happy with her life.
She's at the perfect point of her misery to really get into this book.
And she starts reading the book. Yeah. And so then we start seeing that story where Jake Gyllenhaal's in it. And it's just all, the book that he writes. And then every once in a while, she stops reading.
Right.
And maybe something happens in her life or when we look at her in reality for a little while.
Right.
And then we go back to the book
story,
and it's a really gruesome, freaky, kooky story.
It's a disturbing story.
And so she's reading it, and part of what doesn't necessarily come across exactly perfectly in the movie that comes across a little bit better in the book is her just thinking, how could a person that I know
right.
have written this insane book, right? Yeah. And it does come through, I guess, kind of,
it's hinted,
you know, whatever. Yeah. But they focus a little bit more on that in right. the book and on her constantly stop, like, I can't read this anymore.
Right.
Because,
so disturbing. Yeah.
Because I know who wrote it, and right. it's just, it's too weird. So anyway, so that's the movie. And I've spoiled the trailer for you, and okay. now you don't get the surprise.
You're right.
I don't know what the thing is with
either.
The trailer. They just want people to be surprised that
I
it's
guess.
That story
it,
or
this is a
whatever.
Hard one to trailerize because you want to represent bringing an audience in.
Right.
You got a lot of stuff, but maybe that's the only way to do it. But yeah, it's a little duplicitous. It's not really legit.
It's strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I could just see people watching this going,
wait. What? Yeah.
It's not what right. I thought was happening. Right. I wanted him to be screaming at Amy Adams
right.
and, you know,
right.
whatever. All right. So I gave this one a 9.
Was a half off menu. I had you at 8.5. This would be an easy one to do then because I'm at 9 as well.
Ugh.
I had so much fun with this. I had so much fun feeling uncomfortable when I was watching this.
Yeah.
Feeling like not.
And
not wholly disturbed.
And now that we've thrown that out before we
yeah.
do anything else, I've read it.
You read
Have
Tony
you read
and Susan? I haven't read Tony
yeah.
and Susan. I know
yeah.
it's based on a story, and I had wanted to, and when I knew we were going to see it, I wanted to. But then I thought, I always have this thinking of, do I want to know the story before so I can compare the movie to the story, or do I want to go in and just see how
and
good this
figure out
was?
What it's like?
And
right,
this
right.
So interesting to me. Tom Ford is kind of an interesting person.
Yeah.
I just wanted to see what happened.
Right.
And even before the credits were done, when they're showing all the women dancing, I went, man, I probably should read this. Like,
right.
I don't even know what's going on yet, but I hadn't. So
yeah.
Was it as good as the story? Because I know Tony and Susan is.
It is pretty much.
Yeah.
Like I said, they're kind of.
There's some difference.
There's sort of some shifts
things,
and,
yeah,
and
overall.
Stuff is different.
Yeah.
But yeah, it. I mean, obviously, it's I gave it a 9, so
right.
So it's still good, right?
I
but like I said, there is this whole, they just hit things a little harder in the book,
yeah.
Like her really struggling with the fact,
yeah,
especially at first,
yeah.
Like for the first half of reading the book,
right?
They really hit this, like, I can't believe that I was married to this
right.
guy and he could write this.
Right.
And so they keep kind of hitting on that. And then it gets to a point where you get like kind of almost halfway. And then as she gets, you know, towards the end, then it's, you know, we won't win the movie either,
right,
but
right,
then she's
right.
obviously going in a different direction. Right?
Right. They say things in the film earlier on when she's not in the story, she's the art gallery owner, who's reading this and basically talking in some way about who it is. Cause there's a point where in the movie, she's like, I got this manuscript from, you know, and she's just saying, what's happened. And then she divulges to the audience through this conversation that she left him cause he's too nice. Basically.
Right. Right.
But he was just not, she doesn't come out and say he wasn't man enough, but she just realized
but
at
he's,
that stage,
he's not ambitious.
Right.
And he doesn't have,
and he always wanted to do these things, but she always thought that these things would never come to fruition because he doesn't have that thing in him.
Right.
And now that he discovers that this is in him.
Right.
And she's in such a neutral, negative spot in her life where her marriage doesn't work. And she clearly seems, at least the way she's clearly bored by her position as the art house owner or the
right.
purchaser. Like she just doesn't feel like art exists anywhere anymore.
Right.
And then she gets something in the form of art that totally takes the wind out of her. And we see why, because as that story unfolds, though she might be an unreliable narrator in some ways, I would have watched another 4 hours of that story.
Right.
Because it was so
and,
incredible.
And the way that the movie kind of weaves in
yeah.
her story with her mom.
Right.
And
yeah,
her,
right.
mom
her mom
kind
too.
Of,
yeah.
you know, kind of being the instigator of her feelings there at the beginning
right. yep.
where she keeps saying all this stuff and she's saying, you know, like the things that you love about him now are the things that you're going to hate about him.
Yep.
And then she ends up actually getting divorced and
right.
actually kind of looking at him like her mother and then they get divorced and all
right.
that. That was all really well done in the
right.
movie.
Is there a sense in the story in the way that the movie, at least I don't think I'm putting too much on it, where in the film she's already committed to leaving him, if not having left him, and she's she's gone to the doctor to fix the situation, and they see him in the rain. And basically, the film seems to suggest that maybe he didn't have that in him all along, but after she did what she did to break up with him, that created that part of him.
You know, I don't know if that's exactly what it is. I think it's, you know, it's kind of like melding the book and the movie in mind at the same time.
All the time anyway, but it certainly looked like that unlocked a part of it.
I think what it is I think it's a little bit more. I think what she unlocked in him is the ability to do what he does at the very end of the movie, very end. But in terms of writing the book itself, I'm not sure that's – I think maybe that's kind of what he to think.
Right.
But I think that it's really more like it's just art to him.
Right.
It's just a book to him. It's like trying to go, you know, what made Stephen King such a nut that he could write crazy horror? And that's not it. I think it's
just – got a good imagination.
Right. I think that's what it is. But
I was hoping. Because it would be less to think that it took a prodding like that to make him be able to write a story like that instead of the believability, which is more interesting to me. He had it in him all along.
Right.
Like that was it. Like that's good.
Right. But like I said, I think what maybe she opened up in him was the ability to. And I won't say the ending, except that the ending, I even knew the ending.
Right. Yeah.
The ending was still awesome.
Yeah. Cool. I got to tell you, he's popped up on a couple different things watching, just as an aside. Michael Shannon, anyway, is really great in the very small role that he has. So was Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Guy,
when they go to see him and he's outside going to the bathroom, I was watching that and I'm pretty desensitized to everything I can see in a film. I was watching that going, this is so weird and awful and creepy, and I don't even know what's going to happen. And part of that reinforced the idea that I was really happy I didn't read it before.
Right.
And also just every once in a while, for the number of films I see, for the number of films I know you see, when you see something interesting and new and just like edgy,
right.
Like that's so exciting and refreshing.
There is a lot of stuff in the movie. I mean, maybe not a lot. I shouldn't say a lot, but there are things that are kind of the more edgy smack in the face in the movie that are not either aren't in the book or aren't exactly how it happens in the book. It's like at the end of the day, the same thing happened, but it's not exactly the same. And so there's some like shifting of stuff along those lines, but the book is really good. But we only have 2 minutes, and I'm not really sure what else to say about the movie, but it is so powerful and in such a weird way too. There at the beginning of the movie, it's hard to watch when it first starts out and she first starts reading the book, and it's kind of great the way they do it in the movie, I think. They have that first part and they first like cut away to her like laying in bed.
Right.
And she's just so good at delivering that.
Yep.
Because that it's not really like a scene, right? It's just this little shot of her like looking when she stops reading the book.
Right.
And she's just like, wow, you
and
know,
it's such a quick,
and it's exactly what you're doing watching it, because it's that hard to watch. It's awesome. Weird it's and good. Crazy and it's a freaky thing. And it all so weirdly comes together, and it's really kind of, so in the book, I mean, I guess people could,
don't worry about that.
People could,
we're gonna go over
change the world of what the book's about and all that stuff. But in the book, and I hope in the movie, in the book, it's almost like what happens at the end as we finally get through all of this book and we've got her at the end, is that she actually finally matures to the level that he was at the whole time.
Right.
And she can't believe that's what her life, what happened with her life, like that she realizes that he just was there and I blew it.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that. But in the book, it's like they talk about it more. So if you get it out of the movie, that's okay.
That's what I got.
It's not really that they talk about it, but you know, you hear her thinking about it and you know, whatever. But it's but what's weird is that I was going in. So the live show is going to cut off in a second. We'll go over like a few minutes maybe, but we're off on the live. So going into it, having read the book, it's kind of a weird struggle because are they going to be able to pull that off in a movie? Because it's hard to pull off in a movie. It's hard to pull her off in a movie.
Right.
There's nothing really about what happens in the book, in the book within the book, right? There's nothing really that's hard to like pull off. It's just weird and crazy and a wild ride that you're on and everything. But actually delivering what she gets out of it and what happens to her in her own mind, right? That's hard to pull off. And I think they did it like really well. The only reason that I didn't give this movie a 10 is that there were a few scenes in the movie that were, I think, overwrought, kind of. They were trying too hard to be one thing. And then the worst part for the movie, especially there are a couple scenes with Michael Shannon where they were trying too hard to be a certain thing. And then it didn't even matter that they were that thing.
Right.
And then, and that's like now, now you're just, now you're just kicking dogs for
there's one scene,
dogs.
I think
it's
the same thing you're thinking of, and I won't ruin it either. I'll just say there was every scene but one with Michael Shannon I felt was effective, and then there was one that was kind of like just it should have been an outtake. It just didn't, or they needed to redo it and tighten it up because it just was so weird for who everybody was supposed to be in that moment, in that room. And it isn't, and it isn't everyone, but it's him certainly. I actually think Aaron Taylor Johnson is actually fine. Oh man, that guy's really good in that whole thing. But yeah, I was going to say, you know, this probably even edges closer to 9.5 for me than 9.
Right.
But there is when I'm watching it, despite the uncomfortability that was welcome and the weird, like fun anxiousness that I got in watching the story in the story, there's just something that's missing there from making it a 10 all the way across. It's just, it's not a cohesive thing. It's not something that either Amy Adams doesn't do or Jake Gyllenhaal doesn't do or the director or the screenplay. It's just there is something missing. And I feel like this is pretty close.
Yeah.
You know, and that's okay. Like it doesn't
have to get a
10.
There's some of the stuff for me that pulled it down. And, you know, there's a lot of little things and all together they still only bring it down one star.
Little.
So it's not like these are bad things.
Right.
But there's some of the stuff that's in her real life.
Yeah, the word
that we watch too much and either for the wrong reason or no reason where she has to talk out loud at somebody for a while and she didn't really have to.
Right.
It's just that we sort of are working on a theory that she had to when she didn't.
I also love films like this. This is why I really dig, you know, things like Prisoners or stuff like Christopher Nolan's film where it didn't, even though it did do that on one occasion and maybe more than once, it really doesn't pander to you. It just expects you to keep up. It expects you to like kind of get
right
in the knowledge. And, you know, it doesn't just like spell out everything. It's not kind of girl on a train, like let me voice over and tell you everything you're not paying attention to.
Right. And when you get to the end in this movie, it's not like getting to the end of Girl on a Train, right? It's not that, it's not exactly that it's like a big shock or surprise or like, oh God, you didn't see that coming. Like maybe you saw it coming.
Yeah.
I don't know if most people will see it coming, but except that the only reason you really see it coming is because there's not enough time left in the movie for anything else.
Right.
But it's not kind of like, here's the big surprise. It's just like, you didn't expect that because of the characters.
Right.
And then suddenly this thing happens and you're like, oh, I was like really watching
really
a whole other movie
the whole
time.
I'm actually kind of looking forward to seeing this again at some point, not right away, but you know, soon enough, because there was a part of the film when I was enjoying it so much, I started realizing that I think I was missing some obvious things. Like there are these things where like Amy Adams as the art gallery owner, she's walking around and I caught one. She like walks in front of this thing that just says revenge. And I'm like, of course.
Right.
And I'm like, wait a minute. Have there been little
And
if there have been, Jesus, I haven't been paying attention because I'm so much watching them. I'm not watching the foreground. And is that giving foreshadowing? And it was this weird thing of like, all right, there's a story within a story, but I wonder if there were metaphors within metaphors.
Right.
And I want to see it again.
Which is really cool, like, because if it turns out that you can do big things like that and you don't even notice it because you're too involved in the movie, that's a sell there.
Right. Absolutely. And you know, go see this. This is so much fun. It's just so much fun in it, and how uncomfortable.
Make sure you know who you're seeing it with, though. Right. If you're going to the theater, don't bring just anyone.
Don't just take your grandmother who hasn't seen for a long time or your kids. Don't bring your kids to this.
All right. So as far as setting the stage for hitting awards, this is one that I think should have had a lot more awards.
Yeah, I do
too. It was really good, especially with there are two or three things I could have not recommended, or I could have not voted for best picture. I'd have voted
for this,
even if this was only nine.
Right.
Anyway, we're way over our time already. So you've probably spent way too much time with us. So we're going to let you go until next week. Next week, don't even try to predict what movies will be, because there will be four or five and it could be anything, but nothing really huge hits next week, I don't think. And there's like this weird bubble of time.
Maybe it's Bad Santa 2, or is that later?
Maybe. It
because
might
everybody's
be.
Staying away from Rogue One the week after.
Right, you know? Exactly. Anyway, so, but yeah, we'll have tons of films, including stuff coming up like Assassin's Creed and Rogue One, like those big things, but then everything is coming out. So next is going to be crammed, right? But anyway, we'll let you go. Thanks for tuning in to us. Please share, subscribe on iTunes, rate us on iTunes, and otherwise trick your friends into listening to us. Thanks.
Bye.